All right, let me jump on into the Right Side Way monologue. Listen, you guys are going to want to hear this one. I'm telling you right now, this one's going to make you proud to be an American. But I'll remind you guys also that attorney Stan McDonald is the daily sponsor of the Right Side Way monologue. Stan McDonald, partner at the law firm of Wilmer & Lee, 30-year veteran practice of law, sponsoring daily of the Right Side Way monologue. And I'll tell you more about him here in just a minute. All right, I told you this was going to make you proud. It's also going to make you just stand back in amazement. This past Tuesday was Medal of Honor Recognition Day. I wish I had thought to say something about it that day, but the bottom line is Tuesday was Medal of Honor Recognition Day. So a friend of mine took the group of boys he works with in his trail life troop to do a wreath laying ceremony at the National Cemetery. He came back, he told me he had been unaware how many Medal of Honor recipients have come from our home state of Alabama. 33 to be exact. I've had the privilege of meeting several of them, and one of them, Green Beret legend Ola Lee Mize, actually had a profound moment to speak into my life. But the Medal of Honor is not something that should be taken for granted. It's our nation's highest award for bravery and valor in combat. Officially, the Medal of Honor is, quote, here's the quote, you ready? The nation's highest military award for valor in combat awarded to members of the armed forces who distinguish themselves conspicuously by gallantry and intrepidity at the risk of their lives above and beyond the call of duty. All right, that's the official. But let me tell you, what that means is it requires several things that are external to the person. Obviously, there's a whole lot of what's inside the person that made the medal happen. But the reality is it also has to be surrounded by things that are external to the person. Number one, they have to have been in combat. This is not a peacetime award. They must have also been faced with a massively extreme situation whose outcome was actually shaped by their actions. And there must be witness testimony. They got to have somebody to testify, I saw this happen. And the President of the United States is usually the one who awards it personally because it's that significant. Anybody who is a recipient of the Medal of Honor is also given their own flag. They get a lifetime pension from the U.S. government as thanks for their service. And the wearer of the Medal of Honor is actually due to be saluted by any uniformed personnel, regardless of whether the medal wearer is a lower rank. Basically, what that means is that little sky blue ribbon with stars on it means that a general would salute a private. That's huge. It's also honorable. It's also rare. In the history of the United States, there have only been a little over 3,500 recipients total in the history of the United States, despite the fact that millions of Americans have gone to war for our country. But there is one of those 33 recipients from Alabama whose story I want to tell right now. And I do so because it's amazing, but also because of the legacy that he left, and also because I know his family. The man's name was Henry Eugene Irwin, and his friends called him Red. Red Irwin. He was described by those who knew him as a country boy, quiet, unassuming, religiously devout, they said. He was also called the best radio man of the 52nd Bomb Squadron in World War II. Irwin flew with a crew of a B-29 Super Fortress that was nicknamed the City of Los Angeles. He was part of the 29th Bombardment Group. And on his 11th combat mission, he and his crew were flying out of Guam to bomb Japanese installations in the Pacific Theater. And part of Irwin's job in the lead B-29 plane was to drop a white phosphorus bomb marker out of a chute near where he sat to mark the assembly area in the air for all the other planes. He'd done it multiple times before, but this time it went badly. Irwin was given the signal to drop the white phosphorus bomb when the city of Los Angeles was off the south coast of Japan. The aircraft was being hit by Japanese anti-aircraft, but they flew on. And Irwin, who had no hat on, no helmet, he was bareheaded, he had his shirt sleeves rolled up. He apparently pulled the pin and released the bomb into the chute, but the fuse malfunctioned and the phosphorus ignited immediately and it began burning at a temperature of like 1,300 degrees. If you're not familiar with white phosphorus, it will burn continually once it hits oxygen. You can't put it out with water. You have to smother it. It will melt metal. It creates massive amounts of thick white smoke. That's why they use it as a marker. The canister, well, it blew back up the chute into Irwin's face. It blinded him. It seared off one of his ears immediately. It filled the B-29 with heavy smoke that obscured the pilot's ability to even fly. The pilot had to put the plane into a dive with the windows open, trying to flush out the smoke so he could see. And despite his massive injuries, though, Red Irwin remained conscious, and he knew the bomb was going to burn through the metal floor and the bomb bay was right below him. It had to be jettisoned or the aircraft and the crew would be lost. Well, by now, he was actually totally blind. But he located the burning bomb on the floor with his hands. He picked it up with his bare hands while it's still burning. And he stumbled forward toward the flight deck, planning on throwing it out the co-pilot's window. But as he groped his way through the plane, his face and arms began to be covered with the ignited phosphorus, it burning into his skin. At one point, he actually had to move some equipment that was in his way. And he remained conscious, but to do so, he had to have both hands. So he actually held the white-hot bomb under his bare right arm while he used his hands to move things out of the way so he could keep moving forward. And when he did that, the phosphorus burned through his flesh and his side, straight down to the bones of his ribs. He was a walking torch, they said. But young Red Irwin, he held that burning bomb. And he finally staggered into the cockpit. He threw the bomb out the window and he collapsed between the pilot's seats. Crew members did what they could to extinguish the flames, but they were still burning Irwin's clothing and administered first aid. But every time his burns were uncovered, the phosphorus would react with the air and reignite, and it was smoldering in his skin everywhere. Somehow or another, though, Irwin remained conscious throughout the entire flight back. And the only thing he spoke about during that flight was to ask about the safety and the well-being of the rest of the crew. When he returned back to base for medical help, they didn't expect him to survive. Major General Curtis LeMay and Brigadier General Lawrence Norstad, they asked for a rushed approval of the Medal of Honor so they could present it to him before he died. And in one of the few times that a president was not the one to present the medal, a Medal of Honor was flown out to Guam and presented to him in the hospital there. General Hap Arnold, who was a legend in the Army Air Corps, he wrote to him while he's in the hospital and said, "I regard your act as one of the bravest in the records of this war." But contrary to what everyone thought, Irwin did survive. He was evacuated back to the States. He spent 30 months in rehab and reconstructive surgery. He actually regained his eyesight. He regained the use of one of his arms. And he was promoted to Master Sergeant, and he was discharged in October of 1947, 2 years after the war. For 37 years after that, Red Irwin served as a Veterans Benefit Counselor at the VA Hospital in Birmingham, Alabama. But there is, as Paul Harvey used to say, the rest of the story. You see, the legacy that Red Irwin gave is more than just what he did in the war. It was in the legacy that he left to our state and our nation. You see, Red Irwin's son is someone that I've had the pleasure of getting to know. He's Hank Irwin. Hank Irwin, a former Alabama state senator, but Hank Irwin, who is also the central figure in the story of Woodlawn. You may recall Woodlawn. It's the Birmingham school that saw a major revival of Christian faith in the 60s, thanks in large part to Hank Irwin serving as a chaplain there. It became the subject of a movie and a book. Hank Irwin, by the way, also had a very good, solid conservative record in the state Senate when he was there. And in 2010, Hank Irwin, Red Irwin's son, ran for lieutenant governor, but he was beaten in the primary by none other than Kay Ivey. One has to wonder what would have happened if Irwin had beaten Ivey, who went on to take the office of governor when Robert Bentley stepped down. But it doesn't stop there. You see, Hank Irwin's sons, Red Irwin's grandsons, are John and Andrew Irwin, and they are known in the movie industry as the Irwin Brothers, and they are famous for restoring faith and values to movie making with hits like the movie Woodlawn, October Baby, I Can Only Imagine, American Underdog, and so many more. Their movie, I Can Only Imagine, is actually the third highest grossing music biopic of all time. And they are currently the producers of the director and the directors of the hit Amazon series House of David, which my wife and I love. The Irwin Brothers are award-winning faith-based extensions of the legacy left to them by their grandfather, Red Irwin. And there's a quote I want to read to you. It's attributed to Tecumseh, the Shawnee warrior-in-chief. I first heard about it in a movie called Act of Valor. It's a note from Tecumseh, allegedly to his own son. He says this, here's the quote. He says, "Live your life that the fear of death can never enter your heart. Trouble no one about their religion. Respect others in their view. Demand that they respect yours. Love your life, perfect your life, beautify all things in your life. Seek to make your life long and its purpose in the service of your people. When it comes your time to die, be not like those whose hearts are filled with the fear of death so that when their time comes, they weep and pray for a little more time to live their lives again in a different way. You sing your death song and you die like a hero going home." Yet Red Irwin, what a story, and what a life and what a legacy. Medal of Honor appreciation was this week on Tuesday. 33 of them from Alabama. Red Irwin, he committed an act of valor in the war, but he lived a life of legacy. He came home, he lived large, he raised a family that is still changing the world today. And that's a wrap for The Right Side Way.